Hey everyone, this is Congressman Matt Gaetz. Welcome to our live telephone town hall meeting. We are speaking with hundreds of Northwest Floridians in Florida's 1st Congressional District. I've got important updates regarding debt limit negotiations, the specific proposals that we've advanced for spending cuts, for policy changes to try to rein in this Biden government. I've also got updates regarding the border and legislation that the House of Representatives has passed to reform America's asylum laws to get back to some of the policies that did not have millions of people coming across our border illegally, which is what we have now. And also this evening, if you hang with me, I've got an update on some of the oversight work we are doing into just abject corruption and compromise that we see in this government that we must expose, defang, and defund. Again, if you're joining me now, this is Congressman Matt Gaetz, and we've got hundreds of folks on the phone, getting close to 1,000. We're also streaming on Facebook, Getter, Rumble, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. So if you are watching this program rather than listening to it on the phone, just leave a question in the comments. I'll get to it. If you're listening, hit *3 on your phone. One of my colleagues will be able to categorize your question so that I'm able to address it regarding some of the important subjects that we're going to be speaking about. Again, that's *3. This is Congressman Matt Gaetz. We are live, and I am broadcasting from my office right here in the Rayburn House Office Building. Going to get some great feedback from Northwest Floridians. *3 is the way to contribute. Leave your question or comment online. First, I want to give an important update regarding the debt limit negotiations. Moments ago, I met one-on-one with Speaker McCarthy to go over how the discussions are going with the White House, and I want to start with kind of the first major feature of the debt limit negotiations, and that is the spending level. Before you get to any of the policy choices, it's about the spending level. Now, the initial concept I supported, my colleagues from the House Freedom Caucus supported, would be to return federal spending to pre-COVID levels. That would be 2019 spending levels. And guess what? We were still spending a lot of money in 2019. It wasn't like this was a really austere, it wasn't a federal government that had gone through any successful austerity. We were spending a lot in 2019, but pre-COVID levels. That's one concept. Second concept is to roll back to 2022 spending levels. Now, that's what the entire House of Representatives passed in the Limit, Save, Grow plan. Passed it without my vote, but passed it nonetheless. Go back 1 year. Joe Biden right now is talking about freezing spending at current levels, which bakes in all of the COVID cash. And then finally, we've got Chuck Schumer and progressives saying we have to continue the rate of growth that is currently existing with the federal budget. So right now, is it going to be, you know, probably not the outer edges of that, probably not rolling back to 2019 levels, probably not exponential growth of spending, but are we looking at the same spending with a freeze, or are we looking at rolling back spending to 2022 levels? That is central to the negotiation that's happening right now. Second issue, and this is an issue I want to take a survey on if you're listening. Work requirements, welfare to work for able-bodied, childless adults. So not seniors, not the sick, not the infirm, not the single moms, but for able-bodied, childless adults, should people have to meet a work requirement in order to get Medicaid, TANF, SNAP, that type of social service? If you support work requirements, I want you to hit 1 on your phone now. If you oppose work requirements, I want you to press 2 on your phone now. And if you're unsure, press 3. I'll have the results of that survey in just a moment. This issue of work requirements. Now, initially, AOC and Hakeem Jeffries, the Democrat leader in the House, said work requirements were a red line for them, that they could never support an increase in the debt limit if there were any work requirements. Now Joe Biden has said that while he doesn't support my plan to put work requirements on Medicaid, that they will support in the Biden administration probably some version of some work requirements on TANF or SNAP. That's the latest I'm hearing out of the negotiations, is that we're going to get something on work requirements. And by the way, overwhelming support for the work requirements among those who participated in our survey. A whopping 88% of Northwest Floridians on the phone support work requirements. About 6% oppose. So overwhelming support for work requirements. And by the way, you're not outside of the mainstream, because there have been work requirements on the ballot in Wisconsin recently, and they got around 80% of the vote. So I think that 88% in Northwest Florida sounds about right. I don't understand the argument that Joe Biden is making against these work requirements. Next issue. Energy and permitting. I know if you're watching this, and by the way, if you have a question or comment, hit *3. We're going to get you in the queue. I'm going to get to those in just a moment. But you know we've been having problems with energy and fuel prices. Why the Biden administration has chosen to destroy the American energy sector that was dominating the world is beyond me, but we've got to get back to some of those Trump-era energy policies. We've got to put them in law, so they're not just subject to one president doing an executive order one way or the other. So we passed H.R. 1, and we are demanding that the permitting reforms that we've passed out of the House of Representatives that I proudly voted for, that that be part of the debt limit negotiation. Very significant, and we've got that in play. Third thing, the Green New Deal repeals. You will remember that Mitch McConnell joined up with Democrats to help Joe Biden pass the Inflation Reduction Act, which allowed for tax credits to fuel the Green New Deal and all of the distortions that that creates within the energy sector. It's more than $1 trillion in various forms of benefits and carve-outs and advantages for a particular type of energy over other energy. We are seeking the repeal of those Green New Deal energy features. Fifth, 87,000 IRS agents. We think that's got to go. We've made that demand. And so with all of that as the five factors, then the question becomes, if the debt limit is raised, for how long and for how much? House Republicans have suggested $1.5 trillion takes us in to next year. We've got the White House wanting a $4 trillion increase through 2025. That is the key update on the debt limit. I've got a lot to say about the border and investigations, but Ricky from Navarre had a comment about the debt limit. You're live. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks, Mr. Gates, Congressman Gates, up here in Navarre, Florida. It's beautiful today. Hey, I wanted to let you know you're doing a fine job. We got to hold the line on that debt limit. Don't give them anything. They don't give us anything. And MAGA will only go for Trump. No DeSantis, DeAntis is what I call it. Thank you, sir.
Oh, thanks so much for your feedback. And hold the line has been the message that we've shared. And we've worked very hard to try to get our leadership up in that position as well. And I think it's going to be really, really, really important for us to not just cave the way far too many Republicans in the past have. Because remember, that's the driver of inflation. So many Americans right now trusted House Republicans to hold the line against this spending. If you want to weigh on spending priorities, on the debt limit, press *3 now. We'll get you in the queue. I also want to talk about the border, and we've got a border question from Stephanie from Miramar Beach. Stephanie, thanks so much for joining me. What's your question about the border?
Hey, Matt, can you hear me?
I can.
Oh, hey, sorry you're on. I'm driving, that's why.
No problem.
My question, because of the border issues that are going on, are we vetting anyone at the border? What are we doing on the border? I used to live in El Paso, and I can tell you just from living there, a lot of people are relocating to Florida to get away from that situation that's happening over there. And I think most people don't realize how bad it is.
Well, what bothers me is that when I've gone to the border and seen folks in Yuma, Arizona, in El Paso, in San Diego, a good amount of the people that are coming across the border illegally are coming to Florida. Their plan is to get on I-10 and come right through our community. So the vetting is pathetic. It has become a turnstile. But even with that pathetic vetting, we know that over 80 people on the terrorist watch list have made it through. And there have been 1.5 million known gotaways just this year. So it is a true danger. And at the same time, the Biden administration is waving people in across the border. You've got a circumstance where they're trying to disarm law-abiding Americans. Let me ask you this question, Stephanie. If you were in my shoes, would you vote to impeach Alejandro Mayorkas, the Homeland Security Secretary?
Oh, absolutely. Every day of the week. I mean, and a lot of the things happening on the border, most people, I mean, it never gets reported. I mean, there are people being raped, murdered, killed, kidnapped, held for ransom. You name it. It happens on the border, and it's been happening for years. And for once, when Trump was our president, it was like night and day. It was like night and day. In downtown El Paso, you know, businesses were thriving. I have a good friend. Her husband's a doctor. His patients can't come to his office because they're terrified to make the trip to go to their own doctor because it's so bad in El Paso. And no one reports on this. And not to mention, how do we pay for this? I mean, if you look, and this is just me throwing out a number, but back in El Paso, if you owned a $200,000 or $300,000 home, your property taxes were like $8,000 and $9,000 because you were paying these border services. You know, that's what you were paying, the hospitals, the babies, the children, the Medicare, the CHIP, all the different programs in the state of Texas. So how is that going to affect like a state like Florida, like all of the states? I don't think these people realize what's about to happen to property taxes because how do you afford these people?
No, great point. Well, hey, thanks for weighing in on it. I want to broaden that question to everyone. If you support the impeachment of Alejandro Mayorkas and you're listening, I want you to press 1 on your phone now. If you oppose the impeachment of Mayorkas, I want you to press 2. And if you're unsure, press 3. We're going to get a sense of Mayorkas impeachment support opposition. 1 support, 2 oppose, 3 unsure. This is the guy who is supposed to be in charge of securing America's border. You just heard from one of our Northwest Florida neighbors who's come from Texas. And frankly, what Stephanie gave us was a stark warning about the ghost of Christmas future. Because if we allow this to continue to happen in every community, we're going to see the things that we've seen in border towns. And let me tell you something. I've been there, and it's not pretty. When babies in the hospital don't have beds in their most vulnerable state when they need NICU care, you've got a problem. And Stephanie talked about the economic cost of paying for the EMT services, police services, hospital services, jail services, social services, education services for illegal immigrants, it becomes too much for a community to bear. And frankly, that's not to say that we're heartless. It's just that we have to have heart for our existing neighbors. We don't resist illegal immigration because we hate other people. It's that we love the people who are our fellow countrymen. And that is something that we should reflect with great pride. There is a lot of support to impeach Mayorkas on the poll on the phone. And oh my gosh, folks are going crazy on the live stream for it as well. Is that 90% support for impeachment? Higher support for impeachment of Mayorkas than for work requirements. 90% support, 4% oppose, 6% unsure. Very, very strong support for impeaching Mayorkas, and a lot of work to do on the border. Doyle from Escambia, a thought on gun control policy. Welcome. Thanks for participating.
Thanks, Matt. Love what you're doing, man.
Thank you.
That goes hand in hand. Gun control goes hand in hand, I think, with our border crisis. We got to know that we have the right to defend our families. I live out in a rural area. At best, police response out here is 20 to 30 minutes. Not their fault. It's just that we live in a rural area, and we've got to know that we have support from you and the other guys in Washington to maintain our 2A rights.
Yep. Well, what do you think about this pistol brace the ATF has come up with? If you're not aware of this, the ATF is just choosing to say if someone uses a pistol brace, they're automatically a felon. We got a lot of disabled vets in Northwest Florida who use pistol braces. It seems pretty punitive to me. What do you think?
Absolutely. It's just another ploy by the Biden administration and the ATF to try to get more and more control. That's all. That's what I see.
Would you abolish the ATF? Do you think they're savable?
That's hard to say. I wouldn't, not under this administration, I would say no.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your support. We are increasingly concerned about constitutional rights and Second Amendment issues. We've been receiving information from folks in Northwest Florida about zero tolerance actions by the ATF against some of our local gun dealers, and we've been working hard to have the backs of our small business folks. A lot of these are family businesses, and the ATF is seemingly trying to put them out of business. We've got a question about something going on at Eglin Air Force Base from Curtis in Niceville. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Matt. I've learned recently from a friend of mine who's pretty connected there to Eglin that they are spearheading and pioneering a transgender bathroom initiative at Eglin. I was wondering what you know about that. How can we, to use your words, defang that before it would happen?
Oh, well, thank you for raising this issue. So if you're listening or watching right now, Eglin Air Force Base, very central to my home county of Okaloosa County, an economic driver, a huge source of pride. Eglin Air Force Base, where the Doolittle Raiders first trained before the bombing on Tokyo in World War II. So we are a military community through and through. And I have started to receive information, concerning information, from folks who are wearing the uniform about some very strange bathroom policies. And it has to do with when folks are in the bathroom and in the shower, which one they're supposed to go to. And there's purportedly a policy in the decision-making process now. I don't believe that the decision's been executed, though I'm working to find that out, that so long as it says male or female on someone's government-issued card, that is the bathroom that they are supposed to go into. The problem is that does not actually align with sex or just the obvious manifestations of natural gender that we're familiar with. And so, like, in a time when we're trying to recruit more people into our military, it seems like a pretty weird thing to do to tell women that they have to, like, shower with biological men. And so I haven't laid eyes on the policy yet. I've heard some of the concerns that you've reflected tonight, and what I could tell you is that we've submitted requests for information to Air Force leadership, to base leadership, to find out if this is going on at Eglin Air Force Base. But I'll put the question back on you, Curtis. Do you think it's going to be easier for the United States military to recruit America's next generation if these are the policies being embraced?
No, definitely not, Matt. And I appreciate, I'm from Niceville, so I know this is a hometown for you area. So I appreciate all you do with the military. And, and as a former veteran in the Air Force, I know that this is not something that would be supported by the majority of our existing military. And I think they're going to have a hard time recruiting in the future. And so I don't want to see the downfall of our security and military, for sure. Just like the rest of us.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for weighing in on that. And I actually want to get everybody's thoughts on this. If you believe that people should use the bathrooms in the military for their gender assigned at birth, I want you to press 1 now. So gender assigned at birth, press 1. If you believe that that service member can simply change their gender and then go into the locker rooms and bathrooms of something that's not their gender at birth, press 2. And if you're unsure, press 3. And who knows? We may get some interesting reactions to that. All right, we've got Lewis next from Milton. Again, if folks want to chime in, press *3. But Lewis, thanks so much for chatting with me tonight. What's on your mind?
I was just hoping we could swing the Senate back to the right with the absence of Ms. Feinstein. Is that possible?
No, it is such that I think they're, wheeling her around here, and they're frozen in a lot of ways from moving some of the judges they want through the committee when she's not there. But I'm not holding out hope that the replacement for Feinstein in California is going to be someone that's going to move the Senate to the right. But let me ask you the question this way. What do you wish the Senate was doing right now that they're not doing? Because for me, I wish the Senate passed a budget. Instead, they just sit around and let Joe Biden delay our ability to get the country moving forward. So what's your biggest disappointment with the current Senate?
I feel like that in the budget, there's a lot of pork. There's a lot of stuff that could be cut out. Is that true, or have we already cut it down to the bone?
Oh, listen.
And there's still an in-law.
Listen.
Bypass.
You're paying right now for pride parades in Prague. You're paying for wokeism around the world. You're sending money to Ukraine by the billions. There's plenty of pork in that budget for us to cut. Don't you ever believe a politician that tells you there's not pork in the federal budget to cut. That's someone lying to you.
Well, one last question. I'll leave you alone. I am scared to death of ESG and digital currency. Please tell me it's not going to happen. There's not going to be a central bank run by the UN that we're all going to be slaves to.
Well, if they try that, they'll have to do it over my dead body here in Washington. I am so opposed to that concept of centralized finance. I think it is a way to surrender sovereignty and control over our own decision-making. We've already done enough of that with the UN now. I would get the UN out of the US, and I would get the US out of the UN. So I think we've done enough surrendering sovereignty to the UN, the World Health Organization, and we'd do a lot better to not be funding all that.
I would run them out of New York and send them to Geneva.
Amen. Well, hey, thanks so much for chiming in. I want to let everybody know that you seem to hold my similar view and the view of our caller when it came to this strange bathroom situation and really the overall movement toward wokeism in the military. 95% of those who participated in our poll held the position that you ought to use the facilities of your gender assigned at birth. 3% oppose, 2% undecided. We started at 88%, and these poll results are getting more lopsided the more we do them. It's pretty amazing. Jeffrey from Pensacola, thanks so much for joining us this evening. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon, Congressman Gates. Can you hear me?
I can.
Thank you so much for taking my call, and wanted to thank you as well for using this really innovative tech platform to bring us all together. I won't, if I ever break up, please let me know. I work on a location base with a lot of radio frequency, so my calls can break up from time to time. Going back to your comments regarding the debt ceiling negotiations, are you worried that including too many policy priorities will derail negotiations and risk a default on the national debt that would hurt everyone?
No, it's a good question, and it's something we really grappled with, and we probably could have put in a lot more, to be honest. I would have put in clawing back the money for the $325 million FBI facility. I probably would have not spent so much money on Ukraine. I would have put guardrails there. But we really felt like when you talk about work requirements, when you talk about energy and permitting, when you talk about, you know, getting the IRS out of a negative posture with our economy, that those things weren't just less spending, but they also supercharged the growth. I mean, think about it. Even if work requirements don't really save you a lot of money, the fact that they get people working, increasing labor participation, really has its own positive value and effect. The same with energy dominance, the same with just the regulatory state. So I think that note that you make is a reasonable one. We really went back and forth on it, but we felt like all of these things were really important features. And it seems as though the White House has been somewhat willing on the work requirements and on the permitting reform. I doubt they'll work with us on the Green New Deal stuff. But what do you think is the most important concession for House Republicans to get out of this deal? Is it the overall spending levels to you, or is it one of these policy concepts?
Well, I think the debt limit exists for a reason, to make sure Congress has a role to play. But I think the focus should definitely be made on raising the debt limit to ensure default does not happen just because it would hurt everyone in every part of this country. So I would say, you know, a focus on spending tied to that debt limit increase would be the best way of keeping things between the line without it becoming a wish list for either side of the aisle.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate the feedback, and we certainly hope to get some sort of posture that gets our economy moving and that gets this debt under control. Thank you so much, and good luck out there helping us support the mission.
Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate that.
All right. If folks want to participate, you can press *3. Joel, if folks got questions online, you can pass those to me. We got Richard from Milton. Go right ahead.
Hi, Matt. I just want to say that I wish you were running for president because I really think we still need another choice for this election coming up.
Oh, you're kind.
But I do, yeah, you're welcome. But I do have a question on the debt ceiling. Years ago, when there was another debt crisis, Alan Greenspan, I'm sure you know who that is,
yep,
said we can't default on our debt because we're a sovereign nation. We print our own money. And all we would need to really do is just print more money. And it's based on faith. It's not based on a gold standard. So I don't understand why we can't just print more money or just make it up digitally, because that's what we do anyway to get into this mess that we're in. So why can't that just be the solution? How could we possibly default when we're printing our own money?
Yeah, my colleague, Congressman Thomas Massey, sort of brought up a similar point today, that if we were going to default on anything, we should default on funding the Fed. That way we would not be funding the entity that was causing some of the inflation and creating some of the cross-collateralized problems when we borrow from ourselves. I worry that were we to take that posture in its purest sense, you could get into a situation where the full faith and credit of the United States was questioned, that we would be downgraded. I mean, remember under Obama, things got so bad that America literally got downgraded as a global investment. And that has a real impact on our ability to drive GDP growth and to ensure that the dollar is strong and coveted. I mean, you see what our adversaries are doing right now. They're trying to create economies that are not centralized around the U.S. dollar. And if we just printed more of them, or if we essentially monetized the debt, I worry that that would accelerate and that we would be at greater risk of a Chinese-dominated global environment, something that I know none of us want to see. But I also don't think that this is an unsolvable problem. People in Washington act like we just can never solve the debt. But I've gone back and checked. No Congress in history since the first Constitutional Congress has ever voted to spend less money than the last Congress. And that creates a certain moral hazard. When I was in the state legislature and we had to balance the budget every year, you had to make choices. And you know what? If your programs didn't perform and you couldn't prove it, then they didn't get funded in the next years. And it created a meritocracy around what we did, whereas there's so much waste now because we never really drill down on this stuff. Because there's no lobbyist in Washington that's going to make a career out of cutting spending. They all want more spending. Everybody in this town wants more, 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 more. And then the result is the people in Fort Walton Beach and Pensacola and Gulf Breeze get less, less, and less out of their money. And that's what frustrates me about it. But I'll give you the last word.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I appreciate all that. Yeah. And I agree with you. You're right.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for participating. Thanks for letting me work for you. Let's see. We've got another gun comment. Michael from Niceville.
Yes, Matt. It's nice to talk to you again since your last one that you did. I had a question on May 31st. Basically, 90% of my family and most of my friends and about approximately 40 other million pistol brace owners are about to become felons with the snap of a finger by the ATF. Is there anything you can do to stop it, or what's kind of going down the line to stop this, to
now,
law-abiding Americans?
Yeah, we talked about this just moments ago on the show. The ATF is going outside their authority prescribed by law to create a pistol brace rule that would turn tens of millions of Americans potentially into felons if something is even usable through a pistol brace. So here's what we've done. We've passed out of the House Judiciary Committee a repeal of that rule, and I am pushing with our majority leader and with our speaker to get a full vote of the House of Representatives on that in a few weeks. And so when we pushed it out of the committee, it was a party line vote. Every Republican was for it. Every Democrat was against it. But, you know, I think it is really, it is a sign of what the ATF has become today. And it is not really an entity that protects us. I want to know, what would be your perspective on legislation to just repeal the ATF and return their authorities to local law enforcement?
I believe that the ATF actually serves particular roles that are needed to help local law enforcement, if you will.
All right.
That their arrest powers needs to be removed completely, and their prosecutorial powers needs to be removed, and basically turn them into a lab for local police. And that would, I think, get rid of 90% of the problems that we're having with ATF.
That is a good suggestion, and I will leave it at that, Michael. Thank you so much. I appreciate the feedback. I want to get to some of our online questioners. On Rumble, we had a user ask, did you get a satellite phone like U.S. senators? Should Americans be worried regarding World War III? I do not have a satellite phone. I don't know if other members of Congress have a satellite. I could probably get one if I asked for one. Yeah, I heard senators were getting them, but they get a lot of stuff we don't get. Did you know every senator has a secret office inside the Capitol, outside of their... Every one of them has a secret office. No such thing. You can find me, 2021, Rayburn House Office Building. Another question we got online from at BlackGuns2049. Why is the ATF making laws? And it really is the operative question, because the ATF is doing what they're doing because they can't get gun control through the legislative process. In a republic, the people are the ones who get to elect the representatives that make the laws. But with this version of the ATF, they don't care. And that is why the Congress has this ability to vote on the repeal of a regulation, and it's why we've moved that out of the House Judiciary Committee. Contact our senators, get them on our team to get that ATF back into the box that they ought to be in. Other question I got on Getter, can Congress use contempt power to start locking up bad actors? The answer to that question, which, by the way, I get all the time. People all the time ask me, when can Congress just go throw handcuffs on this person? Probably for a lot of really good reasons, we do not have that power. We do not have the power to charge people with crimes. We do not have the power to lock people up. Now, if there is a congressional subpoena that is not being complied with, we can send the Marshal of the House to go and retrieve those documents and perhaps to retrieve a person. But upon that person's performance of answering questions or meeting the conditions of the House, you can't just incarcerate people as a legislative body. Not a power we have. On Facebook, Johnny asks, are we going to remove Adam Schiff? Well, big news is coming on this. My colleague Ana Paulina Luna, congresswoman from the St. Petersburg area, Pinellas County, Florida, she's got legislation that would censure Adam Schiff upon our learning what we did from the Durham report, the lies he told, the Russia collusion he imagined, the complete fraud that he perpetrated on the intelligence community, on the House of Representatives, on the United States Congress. Adam Schiff should be held accountable for that. I'm one of the sponsors, along with Congresswoman Luna, on a censure resolution. But not just that. You have to ask yourself, Facebook Johnny, why did Adam Schiff do this? Why did Adam Schiff destabilize the nation, clown himself, lie about intelligence in the Russia hoax? And it's money in a lot of ways. When you go and lie to the people like that and get them all worked up, they give. And Adam Schiff made millions, $16 million, in fact. So Congresswoman Luna's legislation, it actually fines him the $16 million that were his ill-gotten gains from the fraud and the lies and the fake transcripts and the total nonsense he put out. I completely support Congresswoman Luna in that endeavor, and Adam Schiff should have to pay that $16 million fine. Another question from Getter. Can we get us out of the World Health Organization? We should. And, you know, this goes back to what a prior caller talked about, these debt limit negotiations. There are so many things in this government we need to get rid of. Paying money to the UN, paying money to the World Health Organization, the entire Department of Education, I would argue, we could probably defund, get rid of, devolve to the local level. Substantial portions of the ATF, if not all of it. And yet, we had to focus on the overall spending caps, some specific policy reforms. But part of the deal that resulted in Kevin McCarthy ascending to the speakership was the placement of some very effective fiscal conservatives on the House Appropriations Committee. And I know I've got some colleagues working to defund the World Health Organization, and there's actually a lot of support across the Republican Party to do that and to address that issue. Want to be able to get to another question. Let's see. Jeremy in Navarre got an impeachment question. What's on your mind?
Hey, Congressman Gates. Thank you for the call, the question. First, I want to thank you for all of your hard work, for what you're doing for us Floridians and us Americans, you know, for negotiating on the floor, you know, with McCarthy, and just, you know, awesome job with all that stuff. Yeah, my question is, thank you again. So my question is, yes, accountability and your impeachment. I know we talked about Mayorkas, Schiff, you know, just a majority of the three-letter agencies. I mean, we're finding out, you know, the January 6th stuff, the FBI being involved. So my question is, if, you know, we could, you know, impeachment or, you know, some type of accountability for these individuals that are causing harm, you know. And
do you think there's impeachment justified against Joe Biden?
I personally do, yes, sir.
And what concerns me, I mean, the border concerns me for one, because they're doing that on purpose. But I'm really worried about some of this Biden crime family financial connection to the Chinese Communist Party. I mean, we've got bank records from the Chinese-connected companies going right into the Biden family. We've got Hunter Biden setting up the dinners for his investment fund, no lie, at the Chinese embassy. We've got these guys with shady deals with Romanian business people. There's a Moscow deal that Hunter Biden was trying to get in. And what I wonder when we expose this stuff, does it really sink in with people that the first family is compromised? Or do folks just think, all politicians are trouble, and do they move on? I mean, what do you think is the general sense out there about, like, the overall corrupt capture that this family has fallen into?
So me personally, and a lot of my friends and family, I mean, we agree. I mean, there has to be some type of accountability. I mean, with all of those business dealings, and, you know, with our border, you know, we got Chinese, you know, coming in, and, you know, with Millie, you know, with the pullout from, you know, Afghanistan. So that's my question, you know, just, you know, starting from, you know, the top on down, you know, with Biden, the majority of his administration, and, you know, a lot of the three-letter agency top heads.
I could not agree more. Thank you for the feedback. And we've got to bring more of those three-letter agency heads into Congress to answer these questions. I am very frustrated that FBI Director Christopher Wray is not being forthcoming with the Congress regarding the records that exist on these Biden family members and the investigations. The FBI should not be the enforcement wing for the Democratic Party or the Republican Party or any political movement. And when Congress comes calling, the the FBI should have to show their work. They shouldn't be able to go and deem everything that is negative about the Biden family Russian disinformation, while at the same time doing everything they can to advance every conspiracy theory against any Republican. And unfortunately, that's what we've gotten far too much from these folks. Jim from Miramar Beach, thanks so much for joining me. What's on your mind? Jim, did I lose you? I may have. All right, we'll go to someone else. How about Will from Navarre? What's on your minds?
Hey, so my question is, what are we going to do about the inflation that we're having right now?
Stop. We got to stop printing money, right?
Right, right, definitely. But my main concern is the cost of rent here in the Panhandle and home prices that have skyrocketed. My wife and I both work full-time jobs with part-time jobs, and we can't even afford to buy a house that we want.
It has become a very rapid phenomenon impacting quality of life in Northwest Florida because we got such a part of heaven, everybody wants to live in Northwest Florida. You know, if you got real estate in Chicago, it ain't going up, it's going down. And in a lot of places, that's the case. But like you say, for folks who are working, for folks who are trying to save to get that down payment, if rent keeps going up and up, that's a problem. And then for homeowners, it's also the cost of insurance. People are getting those insurance notices and those premiums are going up. Look, I think a big problem is when you got the government plowing cash into the American economy and giving it to people without work requirements, then it distorts what would be a fair price for lodging and housing. I mean, you know, you talk about you and your wife going to work. Like, what do you think about folks who are able to get their health care, their child care, their transportation, their cell phone, all paid for? And if they're able-bodied people, they don't even have to work or volunteer or be in job training. You think that's fair?
No, that's not fair at all, because we both work full-time jobs making $20 to $25 plus an hour and try to work part-time jobs as well. And we're having trouble paying for our own things, so it sucks.
Well, I hear you, brother. We got to get this economy moving again and roaring, and it was that way once, and I hope we can do it again. Thanks for letting me work for you.
Thank you.
We got another note from Rumble. Go woke, go broke. Where do you stand on boycotts of Bud Light, Target, etc.? There's nothing wrong with conservatives voting with their dollars, and that's what I think people are doing when they make a choice to not support advertising campaigns that run contrary to their values. You're allowed to vote with your dollars. I vote with mine. You're not going to see me drinking Anheuser-Busch products. I'm not going to Target. This is weird. Why are we doing this? Why not just accept that this nation doesn't have to embrace some sort of radical gender ideology or race ideology in order to love one another and engage in commerce with one another? I try not to be like boycott trigger happy, but these corporations are just putting it in our face. And then there's no humility about it when they screw up, right? Like in my job, there's certainly been times where I've said things that maybe I've gone too far. And so I apologize. I rephrase, I recast my intent if it's been misunderstood or if I've been in any way frail in my presentation. But do we get that out of Bud Light and Target? Was there accountability? Was there any remorse for the violation of trust with the people who bought their products? No. It was just, you have to take it. Well, you know what? The American people don't have to take it. And I know on Madison Avenue in New York and probably in a lot of these corporate boardrooms, wokeism is all the rage and everybody's trying to out-woke one another. But out in real America, we're not like that. And we're not going to put up with it. And some of the most iconic brands in the country are going to feel the impact of it. Instagram, Elias says, Biden needs to be investigated for Chinese connections. What is the status of oversight and weaponization investigation? So our weaponization investigations have really shown a political capture of the national security state. Whether it's the FBI dust busting for the Bidens, or the CIA actually trying to cajole their own employees and former employees to participate in election interference, we've proven that case. The question is, what next? And in response to someone who asked the question earlier, we can't go throw handcuffs on people like Clapper and Brennan and Morrell and Christopher Wray, for that matter, if there's strong evidence that they violated the law. Instead, we have to use the power of the purse, starve them of their money. We have to use the power of the subpoena to get the facts before the American people so that in elections, folks will support candidates who embrace structural changes to these entities. We have to use the power of contempt. We have to use the power of legislation to constrain their authorities so they're not able to weaponize so many features of what we expected would be used against America's enemies abroad, but now they're turning those things inward to our fellow Americans, and something we certainly have to stop. Well, I really appreciate everyone so much for participating this evening. We're reaching the end of our time period, but if you're able to go to gates.house.gov and sign up for our email newsletter, you're going to be able to get a report every week regarding the work of our office, co-sponsored bills, high-impact meetings and efforts that we've undertaken in committees and beyond. And also make sure to subscribe to our podcast, Firebrand. We usually don't get the dynamism of call-in, but we have some of my colleagues in Congress that stop by and talk about the key issues of the day. You can subscribe to Firebrand on Rumble, on YouTube, or on any podcast listening platform that you participate in. Again, this is Congressman Matt Gaetz. Thank you to the many thousands of you who participated this evening. It has been a joy. Good evening. We'll chat again soon.